Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Chris Rossini, our co-host. Chris, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you again, Dr. Paul.
Very good. You know, I've talked about gold for a long, long time, and a lot of other people have talked about it for 6,000 years, and it's been pretty well recognized as money. But it was reinforced not too long ago by Bernanke that gold is not money, that only Federal Reserves or notes are money, and the only reason central banks hold gold is for traditional reasons. There was somebody else that predicted all this stuff that gold was not money was Keynes back in 1924. He was sort of the pre-Roosevelt era. He was moving in with the New Deal, and the setup was if you want a New Deal and a big deal and big spending and big government, you can't have the gold standard hanging around because gold is a restrainer on big government and abuse of government. But anyway, that was the introduction. He said it was a relic, and it shouldn't be used as money. But you know, I remember the very first time I got on a radio talk show, I think it was about 1974. I'd been interested in the monetary issues because of the breakdown of the Bretton Woods and sort of burying the gold standard for a period of time. At least they didn't want gold restraining what was happening, but we finally had to cave in and refuse. We admitted our bankruptcy and refused to return gold for paper money. But I got on a radio talk show. It was local. It wasn't big at all. And I had the audacity to bring up the subject of gold, which nobody was interested in. I'll tell you, nobody was interested in. But that was sort of my thing that I was interested in. And I remember one gentleman calling up, and he was a labor union leader. And he cited some things from Gompers, and he said that gold is a friend of the working people. I haven't heard that too much lately, but he sort of had an insight and knew about it, and he thought that inflation was not beneficial, you know, to average people. And of course, I don't think it's very beneficial to the cause of liberty, because what it does, it removes all restraints on the politicians. It gives them license to steal at will in secrecy. And it creates a condition that's totally immoral, but essentially always acceptable as long as the people who are the people that are going to receive something for it, they're not going to say anything. And when you think of it, Chris, there's a lot of people who receive on the short-term benefits. It's borrowed money. It's fake money. But it can last a long time. You can just print money and pass it out and gain political favors. Welfareism is one thing. Militarism is another thing, fighting wars, irresponsibility, running up deficits, that's permissible. And they always have their cover. It isn't because Keynes introduced the notion that he's the smartest academician in the world and he knows it, and this whole thing about gold is foolish. And they figure they have the credentials, the establishment, the people in the colleges, the university professors, they generally agreed, and they weren't unanimous in the 30s when Roosevelt was moving in, but there was a lot of movement. There was still superficial talk about gold being important, and it wasn't a relic. For once, FDR was that way. He says, I'm going to keep the United States on the gold standard. And he, of course, was the instigator of it all. And it didn't take him very long for people to give up any hope that Roosevelt was interested in really the gold standard and limiting government, because within days that there was a banking crisis that they helped create, and the banks were closed and gold was confiscated, and they were truly going to make sure it was a relic and nobody ever cared about it. But Chris, I think there's pretty good evidence that no matter what they do, even over long periods of time, and when you think about it, from 1944, when Bretton Woods was started, until it was acknowledged that the whole thing was mystical, it doesn't work, until the failure in 1971, gold was not of much interest to people because the Federal Reserve notes were working, but the conditions changed, and right now, gold is back in the news again, and rightfully so, and I hope we can contribute something to finally settling this argument about what money really is and what it ought to be, because it has a lot to do with personal liberty.
Oh, it has everything to do with personal liberty. And that was a great quote about putting how it's good for the working person. Absolutely. When you have gold, it puts economic power in your hands, not the government's. You know, if government wants a wage war and they need money, they would have to come and get it from you. They don't want to do that. They'd rather print money, and that, and you have no say whatsoever, whether it's war or new welfare or empire. They don't care what you think, and that's why the printing press is their friend. They don't have to come to you. And in order to have this system, you have to have extremely good propaganda, and that's what they have. You know, we've seen since 2016 propaganda, but with money, it's been for almost 100 years, whether it's from government itself, media, the schools or universities. You're not even supposed to think about gold, or even the Federal Reserve, for that matter. Don't question who they are, what they do, what these green pieces of paper are, where they come from. You just go and work for them and don't worry about anything else. And unfortunately, it has worked for 100 years. Most, you know, if you're asked about gold, the most you're supposed to say is, well, it's a nice color. But you know what? The day is coming where that is going to end, because supply and demand is going to hit the Fed really hard.
You know, during this period of time from 33, when gold was confiscated by Roosevelt, up until then they passed Bretton Woods, the central banks weren't rigid in what they were supposed to do. They were supposed to honor their currency against our dollar, and our dollar was always as good as gold. But the change that has occurred is that there's probably only one really significant country in the world that still actually acts on the assumption that gold is a relic, and that's the United States. We're one of the very few central banks not buying gold. The people who are trying to enter in to the fold of participating in the reserve currency, like Russia and China, especially China, they're buying gold, and Japan buys gold. So there's a lot of countries buying gold, but the United States does not buy gold. So they've actually been influenced by the Keynesians of the world and the academicians who just make fun of this. At the same time, markets are very, very powerful. So even during the period of time with Bretton Woods, there was a marketplace. They didn't talk about it a lot. And toward the end, in the late 60s, before 71, before they threw in the towel, there were people selling and buying gold at, you know, it was 35, but it was selling at 30, 36, and 38. And finally, the people who were fixing the price of gold, thinking that they could overcome that and still say that we're good as gold, but we won't obey the rules of gold, they finally threw in the towels, and that's why, you know, the markets did rule, but not immediately. And this is why some people get very frustrated. You say, well, look, they've been printing money. Just take the last 10, 15 years, printing money like crazy. And you think gold prices should be soaring. And, you know, gold did go up to $1,800, but then it went back down to $1,000 and sat around there. And it's 2016, it was still $1,000. And now, of course, it's $1,800. And so the mistake that is made is you can't look at the money supply figures, which we do, and we certainly did that in the 1960s because the Fed was watching money supply figures very closely. But if you look at that, the reaction in gold and in the marketplace is not immediate. There's too many variables. You know, there's a lot of subjectivity in there. Values are based on subjectivity in many areas, even though the objective fact that if you print a lot of dollars, the gold price is going to go up in terms of dollars. But you can't say, well, tomorrow or the next day. It doesn't happen that way. You know, and then the price of gold, even though it was sort of set more by the market and the influence and some more rigging, you know, up until from 71 up until the year 2000, gold at the year 2000, it's hard to believe, gold was $270 an ounce. But that was all the maneuvering that's going on, and maybe it was deliberate. Maybe those countries that are buying gold and were buying gold bought a lot of gold. But eventually, just, you know, 20 years ago, it was only $270 an ounce. So the point being is long-term projections are pretty darn reliable short term. See, that's why, although I've always purchased gold as a protection for my family and all, I never was comfortable with the futures market, buying and selling. Oh, it's going up tomorrow, but next week it's going to go down. And that was never appealing to me. So when I look at it long term and look at it more strategically, you know, it has done exactly what I had anticipated, maybe a little slower than I had anticipated, you know, but gold at $35 an ounce when I first got fascinated with talking about it and in a political sense, I would say that the fact that I bought gold coins back then wasn't the worst idea in the world, but it was also periods of time, long periods of time, where gold just did not move in terms of dollars. But that brings in, you know, other factors, and, you know, war has a factor, the deficits have a factor, and sometimes more so than others. But right now it's coming together. The market and many other governments other than our own are recognizing the fact that there's a lot of paper dollars out there, and what we don't want is people to get thinking about the gold too much as being the cause and effect, because what's liable to happen is it still is a restraint. When you have gold, you restrain big government, as Chris pointed out. But if you do that and the government can't handle it because there's too many choices made, they're still going to be concerned. I don't think that it's coming around the bend at all under today's circumstances, where we'll have a president come into office and decide that what we'll do is what FDR did. Tell the American people, you don't have a right to own gold. It was in 71 when told people, foreigners didn't have a right to get their gold back with their Federal Reserve note. So if it comes now, they're still going to be determined. Rigging the market is a big thing, but manipulation of tax codes is another thing. I can foresee, you know, a time when things get really, really bad, which I expect we're on our way to. And if people have gold coins and silver coins, even the ones that are legal tender, you know, the Eagles are legal tender, I can even foresee this as being treated in a special way. Although we call it money, and also the government made it as legal tender, we know that the silver eagle is $1. Well, it's worth, retail price of an eagle now is about $25. So if we do that, one thing they could do is if people get their silver out, no matter which kind, and silver eagles, whatever, and you say, well, I need to live off this. I'm going to go, and at the current rate, I'm going to get Federal Reserve notes from the bank, and they are going to exchange it. My fear is that they'll do that, but they're going to tax you. And that won't be confiscation of the coins, but it will be confiscation of your wealth by regulating how you can spend it. Other people recognize this and worry about it. Some people park their gold overseas, which to me was cumbersome. But for some people, that satisfies others. Others figure, well, I'm not likely to cash it into the bank because, you know, there'll be too much. Too many papers to fill out. But I can conceive of a period of condition as we're getting more chaos in the street and the violence we have, where people might say, oh, you know, I owe you $25, will you take this silver ounce, you know, something like that, and just do it. Because and then people say, well, that might be illegal. It may be illegal in the current system circumstances, but it's not illegal under the Constitution, and it certainly isn't immoral. What they've given us is where the immorality is.
That's right, Dr. Paul. And, you know, I know you have been asked this question for many decades, and sometimes people ask me, they want to know, when will this Federal Reserve nightmare end? And, you know, it's just impossible to give a specific date and time, because man's actions and valuations cannot be predicted with certainty, but people want certainty. I mean, look what's going on today with this virus. People want certainty about what's going to happen, and they're going to government for that certainty. People who lie all the time, and they're lying about the virus, but people, they want to be certain about what's going to happen. You know, a crude analogy is, you know, you can tell someone it's with reasonable certainty that it's going to be hot in Texas in August. But people, you know, if somebody says, well, no, tell me the date and time, August 15th at 10 p.m. You can't say that. There's just too many variables at play. So, and that's the one good thing about free market Austrian economics. You have to accept the uncertainty of life. But there's good news. There are principles that are always certain. And when you understand those principles, you can say with conviction that the Fed is going to fail because they're operating against those principles.
Right. The consequences are predictable. The timing is not, and that makes it more difficult. So I always give a lot of credit to these people who have the guts to do the trading hourly or daily or minute-wise and still make a lot of money. And most of the time, they're not trained in Austrian economics, but there are some very good at doing that in the timing, and they take into consideration Austrian economic theories. So the fundamentals and, the short-term trades, they're interesting, but that's investment, which is not exactly, I'm talking about investment in liberty. It's different, but they're related. The one thing that is unlimited is this whole idea of deficits. You know, life matters. Everybody should recognize that life matters. But one thing that does not matter in the conventional wisdom of just about everybody in every country of the world and the universities is deficits don't matter. And of course, we who have followed something else from a more moral position and a free market position, the protection of liberty, it very much matters. And we can do what we can to protect them. People will ask me, ask constantly, so what do we do? What do we do? And they might ask, what can I do to help, the system? And I don't have an answer for that, but I do have a general answer, and that is do whatever you can. Protect yourself, but try to spread a message. And there's no one way to do that. Everybody has a different role. But I do believe very sincerely, if anybody comes to the conclusion that the situation and the economy and our liberties are a real mess and something should be done about it, if you do absolutely nothing, I don't think that's the right thing to do. I think you have some responsibility. Of course, everybody assumes that. I think first is, taking care of your family and teaching your family and joining groups that believe this and trying to spread a message. And that's the neat part about it. I talk to so many people now that since I was in politics, many of them started their own, radio programs and talk shows and things like that. And they're spreading messages, but they're out there by the thousands. Most of us don't know about it. And I think that's it, spreading the message, spreading the ideas. That's critical that we do that. But I want to also follow up on Chris's question, but how are we going to know? And of course, we won't know. But why do we expect it to happen? Well, looking at monetary policy, we know that when they inflate and have artificially low interest rates and subsidize the deficits, that leads to a necessity of making a correction. Correction to get rid of the deficit and the debt, and also getting rid of the malinvestment, which the market is struggling and demanding that we do it, and it's been happening here in this last several months. It's happening, but people say, "Oh, yeah, it's the coronavirus. That's our problem. We hadn't had the coronavirus, we'd be doing pretty good." Well, the coronavirus is a problem and has caused a great deal of harm, but it just sped along the problems that we have. So we have the Fed involvement, we have the coronavirus involved, and we have also the fact that the military-industrial complex, they're very, very powerful, and they will demand that the deficits continue and spending continue. The welfare state will continue to demand that the spending occur, which is the reason why they continue to do this. So those problems are there, and they're coming to a head, and that's why I guess right now in recent weeks I've understood, at least to the best of my ability, all this going on. But I think what is evolving in my own brain is, yes, I expected trouble in the street violence and racism and all this stuff going on. But I guess what I've had a more direct concern about, and hopefully a better understanding, is this whole thing about the Black Lives Matter. And also how the cultural and economic socialists, Marxists, have become really aggressive. And I think they have infiltrated widely. How is it that some of these dumb things come up and all of a sudden you have the support of all the university professors and governors and mayors and everybody else supporting some of the most ridiculous things? So they have philosophically at least infiltrated, and it's much bigger than I thought. I thought that would pass. It was just a couple kooks involved in doing this. But no, I think they're very well organized, and it's a participant in this because they're anticipating what we have anticipated, that we were on our way to chaos and street violence, but who's going to take advantage of it? Well, we think we should take advantage of it. We think there should be an explanation of why we have the chaos in the streets and people are poor and losing their jobs and there's inflation. And then we'll do something about it, but we hope we can offer the right thing, which is limited government, limited spending, a definition of money, but not the other side, the opposition, the Marxists. Are the ones that they know exactly what they want. And it's not kindness and consideration. It's chaos. And that's why they even destroy some of the monuments and things of individuals that support their position. Because anything to cause confusion and chaos, they're going to do it. So this whole thing is getting worse as far as prediction goes. I agree with Chris. We can't say, in 6 months, this is going to be all over and everybody's going to be in the streets and the dollar won't function. I don't happen to believe that because I think there's a lot of people who maybe are working and prepared for when the whole thing comes and the dollar loses its reserve status. But I don't think it's on our doorstep. I think some people know about it. Some people really want it to take care of it. But the big thing is, I think Marxism and also liberty-loving people have the same opinion that there's something big going on and there's rioting going on now. The big question is, which intellectual arguments will prevail? Will it be that were pervasive and persuasive as well with the founding fathers and try to work a system where it reigns in government? Or are we going to just go along and add to it and say, yeah, that's right, deficits are important. But boy, under these circumstances, we got to spend a lot more money. There's going to be a climactic end to this soon, but it could be 6 months, it could be 6 years, but I think the 6 months is closer to it, but it's not predictable. I think regardless, our job is to explain things to the best of our ability and emphasize the importance of liberty, because you can prepare often thought, and I try to prepare and protect myself and my family, but to tell you the truth, when government becomes more and more authoritarian, it becomes more difficult. I thought maybe TST would go away after the crisis went away. No, it was just there for permanency. And people are telling us now all these emergency things that we're doing now for coronavirus, it's not going to ever be the same again. And that's a big hunk of our liberty that is being challenged. So we have to be prepared, but the most important thing is that we understand how this has come about and what we can offer as an alternative. Chris.
That's right, Dr. Paul. I'll finish up. As you say, there is a big difference between socialists and people like us who advocate liberty. We accept that there is uncertainty in this world, that things cannot be planned out by a central planner, that man's action is oftentimes unexpected. They're very different. That's, authoritarians and socialists, they believe in their plans. You mentioned all this destruction that's going on. This is not anything new. This happened under Pol Pot, under Chairman Mao. They go to year zero. We're going to flatten everything, and our new utopia will spring forth. No, life is far too complex. They do destroy, but everything stays destroyed over and over, but there's an upside, and that's, from our perspective, there are immutable economic laws. 2 + 2 = 4 was the same during the Roman times, during Benjamin Franklin's time, and during our time. Supply and demand, exactly the same in all times. Individual liberty, it's inherent in our nature. That's what we cling to, principles. And that's why we can say that they're going to fail, that the Fed is going to fail, that the socialists, you know, they may destroy things, but they will never have their utopia. And that's why when you come to the Ron Paul Liberty Report, we're going to give you the principles that matter that you can shape your own personal life around.
Yes, and Chris, we've talked about it so much, and the people generally know this, that the people who really hate gold are the people who love power. The people who love liberty, you know, understand gold and want to use it, not because there's something sacred about gold, but it's just a rule. It's a moral rule. It's been around for a long time, and that is to restrain those people who would illegally and immorally use power. But, you know, looking toward maybe a signal of this thing coming down, I look toward what's going on with China. I think the conflict we're having with China right now, once again, is being exaggerated because so often we participate and do things that are very similar, if not exactly the same as what China does with intellectual property and manipulation of markets and all this. But the buildup of the military really bothers me. China's becoming more militaristic. They're smart enough to hold gold. And yet we live a long way from the South China Sea, and yet we feel compelled to send these ships over there trying to provoke something with China. So I think that this, along with China talking about making inroads and using their currency as a reserve currency, that is possible, and that could move along quickly. Some of that has happened. So if there's a big move in that direction, along with this conflict that is being generated with China, that means if we hear more and more news along that line, the closer and closer we're getting to where this whole thing will break down, and somebody's going to come up with the stupid idea, well, the best way to get out of problems like this is to have a war. And believe me, people literally have said that. We didn't get out of the Depression until we had World War II, which is about the dumbest thing I've heard, and the most evil thing you can say is, yeah, let's blow up the world and we won't have any unemployment. You know, it's ridiculous. So I think there are signs that you can watch, and the gold price is one of them that sort of summarizes all the thinking of the people, and it is a reflection of the dollar. It could be a reflection of somebody creating a new reserve currency. I do want to thank our viewers today for tuning in. I thank you very much for coming to our program. I want to thank Chris for being with us today, and please return soon.